Alrighty, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast, which is part of the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. I'm your host, Noah Rubin. This is episode 72 and the final episode of our mini Dynasty Outlook series. We are going to be talking about centers with Zach from Dizzle Dynasty. Let's go ahead and get into it. Alrighty, as I said, this is the final episode of this mini-series, so if you're tuning into this one, you've probably seen the rest and kind of have an idea of what this is going to look like. So I'm going to go ahead and bring in Zach, and we are going to dive into some centers, but before that, Zach, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. Thank you so much for having me on. Really excited to talk about centers. I've been schooling myself up all day, and I've really got some exciting stuff, so hope you're ready too.
Yeah, no, definitely. Centers are fantasy goldmine. I feel like some of these other episodes, specifically shooting guards and small forwards, it felt like it was kind of scraping the barrel. And, you know, maybe it's some of these guys like, yeah, I guess we'll call them a shooting guard, call them a small forward. But centers, maybe it's just the way that things work out with high field goal percentages and blocks and things like that. But a lot of them are a lot of fun in fantasy. I'm going to go ahead and bring up this slideshow where we will go through four little categories, starting with the best of the best, the top dynasty centers. Obviously, I mean, arguably the two best players in fantasy. I mean, if redraft leagues, these will probably be the top two picks in dynasty. They should both be going top five with, I would imagine, Wemby going first in 99% of leagues. But is there any other centers to you that belong in this top tier category?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, Wemby and Jokic, obviously at the top. For me personally, with the ranks that I'm putting together that I'll be posting hopefully this weekend. So currently, Wemby is the very top player for me. Don't think that's really controversial at this point. Yeah. He's been as great as advertised. He's already a total superstar, and it's kind of terrifying that he's just going to keep getting better at this point. Next up is Jokic, who I have ranked fourth in Dynasty. Only guys I'd really take over him at this point are Wemby, Luka, and SGA. I mean, that's pretty par for the course. I think most people probably feel that way. I think the only guy that I have left that I really rank within like that kind of top 10, like the cream of the crop, I really went over this a lot in my head. I think Joel Embiid has made an argument for it in the past, but I think Alperen Şengün I'm willing to put in the top 10. So I would rank him probably 10th in my dynasty rankings right now. And I think those three guys are probably who I'd consider right in that upper echelon.
Yeah, no, Şengün was, for me, I love his upside. Mm. I still have him just like, probably just like one tier below. Yeah. But it's right there. Like they call him Baby Jokic, like the stat set, it, as long as it continues to develop, like it's going to be fantastic for fantasy for a really long time. But top 10 is higher than what I've seen from most people for Şengün. Why are you so high on him?
I just think the team that they're building around him with Houston is really looking great. I think, you know, one of the things that not a lot of people have talked about, especially recently, is the Steven Adams acquisition. Hopefully being healthy, having that kind of defensive-minded guy to play behind him, I think will give Şengün a lot of free reign to kind of do what he does. And plus he's just gotten better like every single year, just significantly. Last year, him jumping up to 20 plus points per game, 9.3 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, there's so much ceiling here. I don't even know exactly like where to start as far as like where that ceiling could go. But I love everything that he's been going towards. And I'm looking forward to seeing how much more of a jump he can make in year four.
Yeah. I agree with that entirely. I have him, the latest dynasty rankings that I started but didn't finish, I had him 13th. So like just a few spots below. So I wasn't saying like top 10 was dramatically way higher than it should be or anything like that, but it was higher than what I've seen for most people. So that's interesting. One other name I wanted to throw out was Chet Holmgren. And it's very possible that you just have him as like power forward or something like that. I was doing the power forward episode just a few hours ago, and Harley mentioned Chet as a power forward. And I was like, oh, okay, like that's interesting. I had him as center. It was good talking about with center episodes. So we'll talk about him as well. I mean, I think he gets overshadowed by being a rookie at the same time as Wemby, trying to pit that head-to-head matchup. I think a lot of people were trying to do that, and it obviously just went in Wemby's favor. But Chet's fantastic for fantasy. Like, how high are you on Chet?
I love Chet. Man, I struggled with that a lot. I was looking at a lot of my rankings and kind of reassessing as we were planning this out. Chet's like right there for me. I would say, so Sengun, I have ranked 10th in my current iteration of the Dynasty rankings. Chet's right there at 13 for me. Mm-hmm. So he would be three spots above Joel Embiid, who's at 16th. He's absolutely fantastic. And I mean, same thing, you know, we talk about how great Wemby has been so far and, you know, what that, you know, the sky's the limit, but I mean, you could argue the same thing for Chet. He's been, you know, absolutely great. And like you said, totally overshadowed. So yeah, totally an argument. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this next season, if I had Chet where, Sengun is, not at all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of, like I said at the beginning, like centers are fun. There's a lot of young upside guys, a lot of guys that are dominating. Embiid is dominating when he's healthy. How much of a concern is or are Joel Embiid's knees to you? Because like to me, it's like when he's on the floor, he's dominant. Like he was the best player in fantasy basketball when he was on the floor this past season. I believe he played 39 games or maybe just a touch over 40. So like, how much confidence do you have that Embiid is going to continue to be dominant?
It's tough. It is really tough to make that decision. I think him going down to 16th for my rankings is kind of reflective, I guess, that I'm a little negative. I wouldn't say I'm like very negative or like very against having him at this point. I would say if you can buy for cheaper, maybe that could be a good opportunity if you believe he can be healthy, which, I mean, hopefully this can be the season. I do worry, and I think I wouldn't say that like the Olympics is something that like is like very prevalent in my mind as far as like his health for this season, because we've seen that that's not always the case, that guys can stay healthy and still play and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it does weigh on me for sure. It definitely does weigh on me on like how much his durability can hold up. And you know, if we have a situation like he did this past season where he plays 39 games or something like that, I have absolutely no idea where I see him going forward. So it's tough. This is definitely going to be like kind of a scary year, I would say, for it.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to keep an eye on his situation, just like Philly as a whole. Is like Nick Nurse isn't exactly known for load management and like limiting minutes or anything. Yeah. But it may not be the worst idea if they want him to actually be healthy during the playoffs. So
sure,
we will see. With Jokic, we'll talk about him, and then we can talk about Wemby, I guess, a little bit. But Jokic is, what is he, 28 or 29? Obviously, he's been one of, if not the best fantasy player. Like, he had three number one finishes in a row, and then I think this past season he was third or something like close like that. How much longer do you think he can keep this up? Is he a guy that it's like, yeah, sure, he's the oldest among, like, those top-tier dynasty guys, but, like, maybe it's like the way I look at it is he's not built on athleticism. Like he'll age pretty gracefully. Like if he wants to play until he's 36, 37, like it's not like he's going to be losing a ton because he's not going to be losing his vertical. Like that doesn't matter. He barely gets up off the floor anyway. So yeah. How much longer do you think he's going to be just this dominant figure in fantasy?
Oh man. You know, I think so. I believe he will be turning 30 this year. I believe it will be kind of like late into the season. But anyways, I agree with you 100%. I think he's going to age pretty gracefully. It's hard to say exactly how much longer he's going to be like this great. I would think it would at least be like, give him like five more years and I'll be like, sure. You know, I think like it's hard to make any sort of prediction, but I guess if you play Dynasty with sort of like that window in mind where it's like, okay, like we'll reassess in like a couple of years, we'll just see what's what. I think you're going to be happy either way. I guess I would hope that it can keep going for longer than that. I'd say 5 years. I feel pretty comfortable that he would still be like in this top five range. After that, it's just like extra where I'm like, yeah, of course, because it's Jokic, right?
Yeah, he's been so freaking good, which makes it so, like, strange, interesting. Like, it's just so clearly like Wemby is the best player in dynasty leagues. Like, he's the most valuable guy. Don't think anybody's really questioning that. I guess the fun question with this is, do you think that there's going to be a point where people are just like banning Wemby from fantasy leagues? Like, it's like, okay, we're going to play fantasy basketball, but like nobody's allowed to draft Wemby. Like, it's just not fair. He's just significantly better. Like, do you think we'll get to that point?
Oh man. I guess if he starts putting up Wilt numbers, then I guess we're going to have to at some point. I mean, it's truly like, it's a fair question at a point. Cause I mean, if he's already doing this, you know, where is he even going to be like in his prime? You know, it's terrifying to imagine, especially being someone who has absolutely zero shares of him in any dynasty. First of all, I'm extremely jealous of you if you have him. Second of all, I'm going to be really sad because you're probably going to end up just winning a bunch of championships in your league. Cause I mean, who's even to say like where he's going to be? I mean, maybe he ends up averaging like 30 and 20 in like 3 years. I mean, you're going to have to ban him at a point. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, really? You know?
Yeah, for sure. I have been one league, and it's the 30 team league that I host. And let me tell you, that league is never dying, because I did like the random lottery at the beginning, got the number two pick ahead of last season. And I forgot who, but somebody went Jokic first. So then I got Wemby at two, and I was like, like either way, I was like, okay, Jokic or Wemby, like whatever, I'll be happy. But
yeah,
that league is never dying. As people leave, I'm filling it with somebody, because I'm going to have Victor Wembanyama in a 30 team league forever. Like, I'm not letting that die. But yeah, like, you're talking about the stats that, like, it's, you know, as a rookie, 21, almost 11 rebounds, almost 2 threes, almost 4 assists, over a steal, 3.5 blocks. You know, just a casual 3.5 blocks.
Yeah, casual. Yeah.
Under 30 minutes per game. Like, it's gonna get so ridiculous at some point that,
yeah,
I mean, hopefully it's not, I mean, like, I don't know, I don't want to say, maybe not hopefully, but like, it'll just be very interesting. Like, I can't imagine many leagues are going to do that, but
yeah,
probably will be some, just because of, I don't know, it's just interesting. But we've talked about a handful of centers. Is there anybody else that you either think should be like deserving of being considered as one of these top tier guys, or somebody that maybe by the end of next season you could see taking a step forward that should be considered among these elite centers?
I think the Cavs fan of me would love to say Evan Mobley. I don't know if he's going to get there. I think it's hard to say. I don't know if I see anybody except for Chet or Joel Embiid, if he's just like miraculously healthy again. I don't see anybody like kind of climbing into this, because just kind of to peel back the curtain on the rest of my guys of sort of this like top 30 group. So like I said, it's like Chet 13, Embiid 16, AD 19, Mobley 21, Triple J 23, Sabonis 24, Bam 26, and then Cat 27. I kind of look at those and, you know, just kind of parsing the tea leaves, that to me, it's really only Chet and Joel who can, I think, can like climb back to there. I don't see anybody else really getting there. I really don't, honestly. And I hate to say that, because center is such a fun position, but yeah, it's just, barring any sort of like wild jump, it's just hard to really see that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of those guys, obviously Anthony Davis is still very good, but we're not seeing him make a dramatic leap, and he's not getting any younger. Yeah. And then Cat was dominant for a while, but the situation isn't ideal. And I think that's the same thing that's holding back Evan Mobley, is that they're very committed to running this too big lineup that every fantasy manager hates. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you said you're a Cavs fan. Like, how do you feel as a fan, like knowing that they're going to continue to try and push this two center lineup with two centers who are very good, but it's, you know, like, how do you feel about it?
It kind of feels like a fool's errand, I guess. I absolutely love Jared Allen, and I absolutely love Evan Mobley. I just don't think long-term we're ever going to make a very strong push with both of those guys. I guess we'll see at the end of this year. I have at least some hope that like maybe we can push through and like overachieve to a certain extent. But yeah, I don't know if it's going to end up happening. I think we're going to have to like eventually commit to like one or the other and just pick a lane. You know, it's a tough call. Yeah. Cause I love Evan Mobley. And if you would have asked me like last year, I would have been like, oh yeah, for sure. He's got like top 10, like appeal. Like he could definitely get there, but yeah, it makes it tough. I mean, I don't remember what Jared Allen was extended to offhand right now. But yeah, the definitely like commitment wise, I'm like, ugh, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to try and pull up that extension really quickly. But yeah, like I loved Evan Mobley when he got drafted. So the extension was 3 years, $91 million, which will tie him through. Actually, this article isn't saying. That's great. I think like 2028, because it would have been through the end of this season that his contract was maybe estimating. Yeah. But yeah, I think Mobley has all the talent. I didn't think that they were going to, and who knows, maybe the extension was signed with the idea that, okay, we'll try this again. And then maybe if it doesn't work, then we'll do another trade. And I think with the timing with which it was signed, they may be able to trade him by the deadline.
Okay.
So like, I think he'll become trade eligible like 5 days before the trade deadline. Cause I think that it's like 6 months after you sign the extension is when you're eligible to be traded, which would be February 1st or maybe that's January 31st. I'm seeing two articles with different dates, but the deadline, I believe, is like February 6th. Okay. And that's entirely an estimation. I don't know if they even published an official calendar, but it's generally a Thursday in early February. So, maybe that'll happen, but I don't know. We'll see. I think Mobley has the ability to get there, but the situation isn't ideal for it. But we're going to go ahead and move on to the underrated centers, because I have Jared Allen as one of my underrated centers, but he may not be like quite as underrated for you if you're a Cavs fan. But so I have two guys to this list with Jared Allen and Robert Williams. But we'll start with Jared Allen just because in like, this is entirely just like a nod to Dan Vesperus with the old man squad. Just like Jared Allen isn't like a super exciting fantasy center, but he's consistently very good.
Yep.
He's not old, like I think he's 26, like he feels like a guy that's older.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he does.
But he's a top 50 guy last year, like, you know, he's going to give you very solid numbers. I don't know, I feel like Jared Allen is just underappreciated, and it's not like he's going to make a dramatic leap, but he's got another 8 to 10 years of just being a very, very good fantasy player.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, I was kind of thinking about this idea of like sort of the tiers, like I was telling you about like my top 30. Mm-hmm. It dries up pretty quick. Like after that, like you kind of get into that tier where it's like, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, it's Miles Turner, it's like maybe Nick Claxton, maybe.
Yeah.
And then right below that is like Jared Allen. And like, I mean, for what you're getting value wise, that's pretty killer. Like Jared Allen, I believe, on my current dynasty ranks is about like in that like 65-ish range. And that feels pretty good. I mean, value-wise, you know exactly what you're getting. You're not going to be disappointed. The guy always manages to do his job really well. He's a really good value. I agree with you. I think he's definitely become underrated just because he's not like that like sexy center that like so many people are going to be after.
Yeah, definitely. I guess one of your underrated centers.
So I'm going to say this with a precursor. It's a tough one. It's a tough sell, I know, for some people as far as underrated, but I think Mitchell Robinson is a good name for that. I think for somebody you're looking at likely outside of your top 100 values, I think he could be good, but it's with the precursor that he's healthy, which it's hard to say at this point. But, you know, I think, you know, I touched on this previously in an article that I wrote about the Mikal Bridges trade, but I mean, really, when you look at that trade and you kind of look at that, like in retrospect of all the moves that they've made since, like with the draft and stuff like that, Mitchell Robinson's really been the only guy who I think has been relatively untouched. And a good byproduct of that is just being a part of Tom Thibodeau's system, where he's not going to get like that crazy usage. Like, I think he averages like maybe like 11%, like 10% usage. He does his job. Like we all know what he is. You know, he's just a high rebounder. He gets those blocks, but he does a good job when he's healthy. But I think the fact that, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein is now gone, Precious Achiuwa is going to be his backup. I mean, he's going to need to be tasked with that role, especially because he is such a good defender. He's consistently like a 90th percentile, like in block rate. He's a high he's maybe one of the best offensive rebounders in the league right now, if not like the best. He does a good job. I just think you're really going to need to believe that he's going to be healthy. To date, it's been kind of hard to see that. The most games that he's played has been 72 in 21-22. Since then, it's just kind of been extremely up and down, especially this last season where it was having the left ankle surgery, and then he had the stress fracture in the same ankle that made him miss the rest of the playoffs. So, yeah, it's a tough sell, but I do think for where he's at right now in my dynasty ranks, which is 124th, I think you're going to get something pretty good if you just believe that he's going to be healthy. So, yeah, kind of a tough sell. I know some people are probably going to like wince a little bit when I say this and they watch it, but yeah, I don't know, man. I think he's underrated.
Yeah, and if you're going to buy Mitch Robinson in fantasy, like this is a great time to do it because, like you mentioned, Isaiah Hartenstein's gone. Like, Precious Jua isn't going to be commanding a ton of minutes, and neither is Jericho Sims. So Mitch Robinson played under 25 minutes per game last year. Was it 27 the year before? Wouldn't be shocking if he was up to like 28 just because he's by far their best option. Field goal percentage was down. Blocks were down, but those could easily go back up. Right. Yeah, I think I ended up trading him in a 30-team league. I'm going to go back and see if I can find exactly what that trade was just for the sake of talking about it. But
yeah, for sure.
I was struggling for a little while there because I was like, I don't know if I want to trade him because like this could end up being a pretty big season for him. So I was like, I kind of want to just like hang on to him, just kind of see what happens. I can't even find this freaking trade, whatever. But yeah, I think this is a big season for maybe him to kind of rise up the ranks. You mentioned 124, I believe you said you had him at.
Yeah.
And if he has a good year, like, he's only 26. Like, if he can prove that he can stay healthy and Tom Thibodeau is going to give him minutes, like, yeah, like he's gonna excel. And actually, just now that I'm thinking about it, the injuries are probably a big reason for his minutes decreasing because, like, just he played like 15 minutes per game over the final 2 months, just looking at Basketball Monster, which was 10 games, but 10 of his 31, that hurts him a lot. And he was on a pretty strict minutes restriction there to the end of the season. Which obviously didn't end up helping because he got hurt again, which stinks. But yeah, if he can stay healthy, like him a lot. My other underrated center is, again, like pretty much the same logic as what you were saying. It's Robert Williams, but like everybody's going to hear it and say, oh, that guy, like he's going to get hurt again. It's like, yeah, like his knees, like that's, you know, it is a big question mark, but I feel like he's been practically completely forgotten about, which like, I guess I'm not saying this with the stance of, oh, like, don't worry, guys. He was a second round finisher 3 seasons ago. He's getting back to that. Like, I'm not quite saying that, but
yeah,
he's about to turn 27. He only played 6 games last year, 35 the year before that. So like, yes, those, like, that's a concern, but like, I feel like you could probably get him for next to nothing. And he's got tremendous upside. Now, the situation also isn't ideal because of DeAndre Ayton and Donovan Clingan. So, but it wouldn't, like, whether it's Ayton or Robert Williams that gets traded, I wouldn't be shocked if one or both was moved, just for the sense that they want to, I'm assuming, feature their guy they just drafted in the first round, in the top 10. So it wouldn't shock me if Robert Williams was moved or the other way around and Robert Williams is able to get 20 to 22 minutes per game alongside Donovan Clingan. Like, that could be an option too if Ayton's traded. But like, he's a guy that doesn't need to play 32, 34 minutes per game to be really good in fantasy because he can block 2 shots in 22 minutes per game and he can shoot a high percentage and get you a handful of rebounds. So like, yeah, 35 isn't even realistic. 30 minutes per game would be ideal, but he's a guy that can have very good value in 22 minutes per game. So I think that him just being practically written off, I mean, sure, maybe the manager in your league is like, no, like, I'm the biggest Robert Williams fan, like the comeback is coming, like there's no way you can trade for him, like, okay, maybe that's gonna happen, but like his value is, I would imagine, like at an all-time low.
Yeah, it it's funny that you said that. I just went back and checked my ratings and it kind of broke my heart because he's 191st in my current rankings, which
yeah,
I mean, that feels wrong. Like, I feel like I could kind of did him dirty, but I mean, you're right on the money. If he just manages to stay healthy, I mean, like, he'll just skyrocket back up. I mean, we've seen what he can do when he is healthy. And It's a tough sell. I mean, it's like Mitchell Robinson. It's like really tough just to kind of, you know, let people know where it's like, hey, I mean, this guy could like really take that leap. But I mean, but it's true, you know, these guys, they just need that, and they can make this like insane value push, or they can help you like win your league. So yeah, I love that. I totally love that. And yeah, seeing 191st, I mean, go get the Time Lord again. I'm down for it. Let's get it.
Yeah. Who is did you have one more underrated center? Or do you have more than that?
So I have two more. Well, perfect. I'll go through my first one, and then we can kind of touch on the last one just because we're not really gonna have a whole lot to go off of. But we'll start with Tracy Jackson Davis. I think it's gonna be pretty good. He's ranked 145th in my dynasty ranks, which again feels low for what it is. I mean, first of all, can we talk about the fact that he fell all the way to 57th? I mean, it's perfect. What happened? You know?
Yeah. That's crazy.
He's been such a good player. I mean, he literally is a Golden State type of guy. He's been pretty good both ways. He's been really productive, even like the limited minutes. He played 16.6 minutes per game this season, 7.9 points, 5 rebounds, 1.2 assists, 0.4 steals, 1.1 blocks, good field goal percentage. I believe he was over 70%.
Yep.
Just really, really solid player. You know, so Kevon Looney still is going to be staying there. I saw just recently, I somehow had missed this during the whole news cycle, but Golden State went ahead and guaranteed Kevon Looney's contract just because they hit that date. But he's still there, but he kind of fell out of the rotation at the end. So I think he's probably going to end up being mostly a non-factor this season. Draymond Green is obviously still there. But, you know, just based on everything, there's no reason that Tracy Jackson Davis shouldn't be more heavily in the mix for minutes next season and hopefully more starts. He played 68 games and he only started 16, and he was still able to be pretty productive overall. So I definitely think there's going to be big opportunities for him. I think my biggest concern is really just kind of on a long-term scale. He's a little undersized as a five. I believe he's 6'9", and it might limit him over time to just kind of being more of like that backup guy. Almost in like a Mitchell Robinson type timeshare where it's like your starter plays 24, he plays 24, this, that, or the other. But, you know, just kind of offering some questions. I don't know if that's something that really concerns you, but what do you think of him and sort of like his long-term appeal?
Yeah. Well, first with the short-term appeal, it's, and then I'll talk a little bit more about maybe the long-term because that is definitely more of a question mark, but it's like you mentioned Kevon Looney, he's there, but he's not going to be commanding a ton of minutes. So like, right. I think just knowing Steve Kerr, like it's probably gonna be pretty matchup dependent who starts, whether they start Draymond at center, Jonathan Kuminga at the four, Andrew Wiggins at the three, or some other lineup. I'm sure he'll experiment with a bunch of different things with Jackson Davis starting at center. Pretty matchup dependent. I don't know if exactly it's like what kind of matchup that is, because it could just be up to Steve Kerr. Like when they're playing against Jokic, like, is it like, do we want, you know, a center guarding him? So Draymond, or is it going to be like, we can have Draymond guarding Jokic with Jackson Davis and help. Right. I don't know exactly like what Steve Kerr's philosophy is directly going to be for that thing, but he'll experiment with different lineups. So he could have a big year this year. Long-term is more of a question mark. I think him being a long-term backup center that is very valuable is pretty realistic. I don't think he's a long-term starter, but maybe he is a guy that can make an impact like Robert Williams in 20 to 22, maybe a little bit more like minutes per game, right. Average over a block per game last year in 17 minutes. Like that's valuable. The rebounding isn't great. He is a little undersized, like you mentioned, but he'll turn 25 this year. I think that's the other thing is like, he came in as a very old rookie because he was incredibly productive in college, which I don't know if that's maybe why he slipped to pick 57, but I remember it being pretty insane because he was expected to go early second round and then almost went undrafted. So good job by Golden State getting him. I'm assuming he's going to be pretty valuable for them the next few years at least, and then we'll see after that. But yeah, no, he's definitely a guy, especially this upcoming season, I think, to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And then you said you had one more guy?
Yeah, I do. So not a whole lot to glean from him, but I just kind of want to briefly touch on Daron Holmes for Denver. a guy I've consistently seen falling pretty far in rookie drafts. In fact, I just had a 30-team draft, I believe it was last week, and I think it's almost done. But anyway, he went like 27th overall or something like that. And I just thought that was like pretty crazy for what he can offer. I've had to kind of bump him down a little bit in my rookie rankings and in my dynasty ranks, because I mean, the Achilles tear is, it's always a scary thing. Every single time an Achilles tear happens, it's always something that we have to be concerned about. Same thing happened with Brandon Clark. I mean, we just had to kind of, you know, react to that in any way but positive, really. You just kind of worry about it. Thankfully, he's been back to form, and, you know, we hope that's going to be the case for Holmes. He could be such a good fantasy player, man. I mean, you look at what he did at Dayton this past season, where it's, you know, a 20-plus point-per-game guy, 8.5 rebounds, 2.4 assists, almost a steal, over two blocks a game, making threes, made a completely random jump as a three-point shooter, going from, I believe it was 0.2 makes and 0.6 attempts in a sophomore season to one make and 2.5 attempts in his junior season. I mean, pretty crazy. He's just been a guy that I've always really loved, and I think is like kind of the dream backup really to Nikola Jokic. As we've know, like they've struggled for a long time as finding like the kind of the true backup. Zeke Nagy's not it. DeAndre Jordan, I mean, he's been serviceable, but he's not that guy who's just gonna like put in like a stopgap, like more or less, because they've struggled for a long time without Jokic on the floor. So I just think Holmes offers like so much value. If he can even have like a rotation role when he is healthy, kind of like Tracy Jackson Davis in terms of like, you know, 16, 18 minutes or whatever, I think he's got enough juice to just be really relevant and be able to cover in a proper way that makes him both a winning player and a really good fantasy player. You know, of course, the key is just going to be staying healthy and showing that he's going to be able to hit those threes at like a regular rate. Obviously, that's not going to be like the make or break. If he just ends up being a backup, that's fine. But that's kind of like the thing he's going to need in order to take that next step to be like a really great player. But yeah, I just really wanted to touch on that real quick, just because he has so much great value to offer. If you can get him for cheap right now, highly suggest anywhere you could. I think that's just a golden opportunity if you want to wait a year.
Yeah, definitely. I think the injury is probably the most concerning thing, and probably is the reason that he slipped in your rookie draft. So it's not unfair for anybody to react in that way, but you're right. Like, it's a good time to buy back in, or buy in, I guess, for the first time,
right?
Because he does have tremendous upside. Like, I don't remember if there was a direct quote or something, but it seemed like they loved the pick. Or no, they traded up, didn't they? I believe they traded up to get him. So like, I think if you're gonna do that, like, I don't remember exactly what they gave up, but like, clearly, like, he was gonna be a big part of their plans. I don't know whether that was this year, like moving forward, and right, obviously that's delayed a little bit, but hopefully he'll be able to come back healthy, because yeah, they do need a backup center behind Jokic, because you're right, the corpse of DeAndre Ayton is not doing that when Jokic is the best player in basketball, and then you're having DeAndre Ayton. He did have one game this past season. It was him and Reggie Jackson had one game where like Reggie Jackson had like a 30-point double-double. He had a 20-point double-double. I think it was against the Clippers. So it's just, yeah, that's not happening every game though. But we will move on to our overrated centers. And just to put this back out there, like, these are not guys that we hate. At least that's not how I did it. If you want to just hate on everybody, that's totally fine. But just guys that I'm a little bit lower on than I feel like most people are. I know we've already talked a little bit about Jalen Duren when we were messaging about it earlier. So we'll start with Jalen Duren, who is a very good rebounder and not a very good defender. He had a good block rate in college. That hasn't translated to defensive fantasy success or defensive success at all in the NBA. I guess so that it's not all negative, one of the perks of Jalen Duren is that he's a traditional center that doesn't struggle at the free throw line. Like, I feel like that's a struggle for a lot of centers. Shot 79% this past season. Yep. So that's pretty good. But I feel like there's a lot of hype around Jalen Duren, but I don't think either of us is very high on him.
Yeah, man. I was such a big Jalen Duren guy, especially coming out of Memphis. I love both Memphis guys, Josh Minot and Jalen Duren, but He's breaking my heart, man. I mean, he looks really good on the offensive end. I mean, like you said, he's a fantastic rebounder. He's made good strides. I mean, like really on that end from last year to this year, and he's taken on more of a key role. It's not a big jump in usage, but he jumped from 13% to 17.3% this past season. So expected really well. You know, it's what you'd hope for in a guy who was, you know, a high upside guy coming out of college. And he's done well on that end, especially for a generationally bad team. So it's the things that we've wanted to see statistically speaking, but oh, he's just such a bad defender. And there's so many things that you can kind of glean from that. And I kind of pulled some stats, which continue to break my heart. This whole thing, I didn't want to be a hater coming in, and I hope I'm not coming off as that. I love the guy, but so yeah, like opposing players versus Durin, he's only generating 1.4% less below their field goal average at the rim. So he's not deterring anybody. He's got bad block and steal percentages. I was really shocked to see that his block percentage is only in the 36th percentile for bigs. I was almost thinking it was going to be like less, and it was kind of like a shocking number to kind of settle on. His regularized adjusted plus minus is a negative 0.94. His solely for defensive purposes, negative 0.5, which is 10th worst among bigs who logged over 1,000 minutes played. Yeah, he's just like such a bad defender, both like on the eye test and the stats. And yeah, it's a tough time to have him for sure. He's still super young. I did some digging and I found that if we compared his age to the 58 players who were drafted in this draft, he would still be the 30th youngest guy, which is pretty shocking. He's younger than Bobby Clinton, which is like pretty crazy to think about. So he has time in that regard. Maybe he ends up getting better. Maybe the guys that JB Bickerstaff brought in as far as like the staff, maybe they are the right guys who can kind of speak his language as far as developing, you know, more proper defensive technique and basketball IQ. But yeah, it's tough right now. It is really tough. I think I would love to have him top 50. I think I have to just like bump him down a decent bit. Yeah, it's really, really tough. And that defense is just going to be such a big thing this year. The defense really this season is kind of what separates him, I think, from having a ceiling like Bam versus having like just a prime Andre Drummond type thing where he's just, you know, doesn't have that shelf life as far as like just being that guy with the modern NBA. He's just going to keep getting eaten alive and the Pistons can't improve. So yeah, kind of rambled there, but yeah, just it's scary, man. It is scary for him.
Yeah, it is. He's like you mentioned, he's very young, so he's already played two seasons. He hasn't turned 21 yet. So it's like when they draft this guy who's like this young, super athletic center, it's like in my mind, automatically I associate with that with, okay, like he's not going to be a bad defender. Like, I don't know why that my mind just goes that way, but I'm like, he just can't be, because like he's young, athletic, like he's at least gonna be a defensive playmaker. But sure, then you look at the numbers and then you just scroll through Twitter and see everybody, like every Pistons fan, say, yeah, he's a traffic cone on defense. And it's like, wait a minute, now so that's when I went and looked. I was like, oh wow, like maybe he's not as good defensively. Maybe I shouldn't just assume that these young centers are going to be good defensively. But yeah, there was, I don't remember, I think it was anonymous, I'm sure it was anonymous, but there's a quote like years ago about Andre Drummond where somebody, I don't remember if it was a scout or GM or what, somebody had said like, yeah, he could average 20 and 20 and have no impact on an NBA game. And it's like that thing where it's like I don't think that that's the exact same thing here, sure, but like the fact that the Pistons could have two generational rebounders that aren't like as good as they seem to be statistically is ironic a little bit, but also like he's still gonna provide value in fantasy. Like he's still super young. Like he's averaged a double double this season, high field goal percentage, not a bad free throw percentage. Like it plays differently than your traditional center just because of the free throw percentage. But the lack of defense, I think, is not only concerning because that's what you want from your centers, like somebody that can block shots, but also just the fact that like if he doesn't improve defensively, like JB Bickerstaff came from a team in Cleveland that was very good defensively and he had two very good defensive bigs, like how much patience is he going to have with this young guy as he's trying to shift the culture of this team? It's like if he's just not getting it, so like Yeah. I'm not saying that that means 20 games into the season, oh, he hasn't improved defensively, like his minutes are getting, are going down. Like, how long does this work where it's like, okay, like he just isn't improving defensively. Like, is he playing enough minutes where he can contribute the rebounds that we need him to contribute? So I think it's, you know, hopefully he can improve defensively so that he can stay on the floor long enough to give us the other stuff that he's really good at. But enough hating on Jalen Duren. Anybody, like, who is somebody else that you have that is overrated in your opinion?
So I don't want to do the DeAndre Ayton thing. He's gotten enough. We can kind of leave that as it is.
I mean, he's on the list, but we won't expand on it. I got you.
Yeah. So we know how that is. I would say the one guy I didn't honestly, like, I kind of looked through, I didn't find like a ton of guys I really felt were overrated for what it was. I think one guy, especially recently, that I've kind of had this revelation that maybe he's overrated or becoming like, or people are just kind of getting ahead of themselves, is Khalil Ware for Miami. He came on really strong in summer league. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic. That I cannot deny. Just really great. He looks like he's going places. But I still have some questions. You know, one of the things that I've kind of seen trend wise recently is that for me, he was always kind of someone who was kind of in like that, like 12th overall pick, 14th overall pick range for a lot of dynasty drafts. Just because there's so many guys that I've kind of liked in that range above him. Like, Bob Carrington's always been somebody that I've felt really strongly I much prefer to wear. But, you know, one of the things that I've just kind of been concerned about is I was initially skeptical of the fit in Miami. They seem like they really want to play him with Bam, which still I have questions about, and I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go. But, you know, we haven't seen that yet, so I guess we'll kind of see how that goes. But it's a lot of like some of my college concerns that just kind of scare me from scouting him. I'm not going to touch on the motor stuff. The motor stuff, I think, is kind of played out. And at this juncture, I just don't think it's really something we can address until we like see him in like, you know, full NBA games and stuff like that. But, you know, he's just not a very good defender. And, you know, we touched on Jalen Duren just now, and I don't know, like, maybe if he falls into that range. But, you know, from what we saw kind of scouting him, he wasn't very good, especially against a lot of the NBA level starters that we've seen. He got beat up on pretty bad at Indiana by both Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey. Obviously, he's not going to face against like behemoths all the time like that. But, you know, I think people have been really loving him. I've seen him going pretty high. I've seen a couple of drafts where he's gone like top seven, like he's gone like 8, 9, stuff like that. And that just kind of scares me a little bit. Currently for me, he is ranked 149th, which is like pretty much on par with a lot of like rookies, like Devin Carter, Zachary Risache, a couple guys like that. I kind of have in that range, but yeah, I think people might be getting a little excited from the summer league stuff. And really the only thing I just want to emphasize on sort of the overrated part, which I can't really call him. It's hard to call him overrated without seeing him on the court for real NBA games. But I guess ultimately, like, I just kind of see him starting to get heavily rated. And it's interesting to me is the reason I kind of bring it up.
Yeah, no, that's him going seventh or eighth, like top 10 at all in rookie drafts is very surprising to me because I had him on my sleeper list, but apparently everybody else is like, he's not even a sleeper at everybody else if he's already going top 10 in rookie drafts. I didn't update any rookie rankings post summer league, but I had him 20th before summer league, like after the draft, just because of like the things you mentioned, like specifically the situation. Like, I think it's a good pick for Miami to add a guy that is a 7-footer that's young, that played well in summer, ended up playing well in summer league. They obviously didn't draft him because he played well in summer league, but
sure,
like a true backup to Bam because they haven't really had one, like Orlando Robinson for a bit. Omer Yurtseven played well for a bit. Dwayne Dedman. There's somebody else I'm missing in there, but Thomas Bryant. I'm like,
oh boy.
All these, they tried it, and now it's like, okay, like they spent a top 15 pick on a center. So like,
yeah,
sure, that helps them long term, and maybe, I mean, heck, Bam became a shooter like at the end of last season, and then for Team USA, he started really like shooting a lot of threes. So like, maybe they want to experiment with that with Bam at the 4 and Ware at the 5, and like maybe that'll work. But yeah, like I think that like it's something that could work out well for Miami. And sure, maybe there's a little bit of upside long term because he's pretty young, and if he develops, then like he played well in summer league, like I said, and like the stats were very fantasy friendly, almost 2 blocks per game. But yeah, that's that level of hype is too much. So I agree that that is overhyped. But maybe in your traditional average dynasty league that not everybody knows all the rookies, they're just going based off of draft order, something like that, that maybe he could be considered a sleeper in that format. But yeah, that's a lot of hype for him to be going seventh or eighth, because there's a handful of guys that should definitely be going ahead of him.
I think, and what really interests me about this is just kind of like a general lesson that like we can kind of glean from kind of talking about centers, is it's such an interesting position for dynasty. I mean, it dries up so quick. It's so hard to kind of find like that guy consistently. Kind of judging from like the 2025 draft, as I've kind of done like my very early scouting, it's like, it's hard to really kind of find like that guy really. It kind of seems like we've just kind of been waiting for like finding that guy, and we just haven't really had him. We didn't really have him this draft. Doesn't seem like we're really going to have one for guaranteed this time around. So it is kind of interesting. From a purely positional standpoint, I can see where people are coming from taking centers like that high, regardless of who they are. The Eve Misi thing, like kind of the same thing. I can kind of understand like where people are coming from on some of that stuff. But yeah, it's such an interesting position to kind of figure out and kind of find like that guy who can really make that dramatic jump. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I'm very intrigued to see this next guy you're talking about, because it kind of is a part of what I was just saying. So
yeah, it is. And it kind of goes against what I was talking about with Robert Williams. And what we were talking about with Mitch Robinson, where it's like Robert Williams. Mark Williams is who I'm talking about. Yeah. Anyways, so Mark Williams is a little bit overhyped to me. And it's not because I don't believe in him as a talent. I think when players get injured and miss a ton of time, one of two things happens. Either everybody forgets about them, or everybody talks about them like they're a legend. And I feel like Mark Williams is the latter. And it's like, this guy who has played 62 games through his first two seasons is, he was good last year, like almost 13 points, almost 10 rebounds, almost a steal, a little over a block, good field goal percentage, like classic center stuff.
Right.
He's just talked about like, he's like proven something, and he hasn't yet. And so to me, it's like, there are other centers, like we just talked about Jalen Duren a little bit, who have played a lot and sort of gotten, I guess, more opportunities to be critiqued. Mm-hmm. And Mark Williams just hasn't had that. He's this young center that just hasn't played a lot and has talked about like he's just this sure thing. Could he end up being like really good this year? Like, could he play 70 games alongside LaMelo Ball, career highs across the board, and just dominate? Like, sure, he could. Sure. But it's not guaranteed. He hasn't proven anything. So to me, it's like, I feel like he's like this safe guarantee in the minds of most people. And to me, I'm just like, I don't know yet. I guess I want to see him healthy. I want to see, and maybe this is part of a larger rant, but I want to see Charlotte communicate to me that he's healthy. I haven't heard anything this summer about his back. And it's like, they didn't communicate during the season. They haven't communicated this offseason. And maybe I need to do more digging and check Instagram stories to see if he's working out and things like that. But like, if the team hasn't really said anything, which maybe I just need to accept it, like Charlotte is not going to report injuries. But I think, I'm a little bit concerned. Like, what if he's just injured again this season? Like, I think if that happens, then it's probably going to be like a total change of opinion to most people. It's like, oh, no, he's injury prone. I don't want to draft him. And then he'll probably be underrated next season because everybody's going to say, no, he's just going to get hurt next year. But
yeah,
I think that's just the way things go. It's like you have to buy low, sell high.
The back thing scares me. There's no way around it. Back injury for guy that big with his frame, it scares me. I just, there's no other way I can like really say it. And the Charlotte thing, like you brought up, it just kind of exacerbates the whole thing. I mean, I was complaining on Twitter about not getting any sort of information about Cody Martin. I mean, like, you can imagine how I feel about Mark Williams just not getting like anything.
And LaMelo.
Yeah. It's just like a whole thing. It's scary sometimes owning guys who are on bad teams. And I think that's a theme both for Duren and for Mark Williams. You just, it's hard to know. It's hard to really trust. And it's not always something you can focus on for everything, of course, but it's just, it's scary sometimes. You just, I need to see it for Mark Williams. I'm right there with you. I need to kind of see him healthy. I need to see him thriving with LaMelo. I need to see, especially LaMelo, healthy in that regard. But
yeah,
I got to see the full thing. You know, it's Mark Williams. I've often seen kind of in that same ilk, rank wise of like a guy like Jarrett Allen. And, you know, I mean, we talked about Jarrett Allen. I mean, he's a consistent guy. You know what you're getting. It's hard to make any sort of bones about Mark Williams this early on. It's just, it kind of scares me. And I kind of question where I'm going to put him in my next dynasty ranks, because that's one guy I kind of highlighted and I just don't really know like where I really want to put him. Like, can I possibly put him over Donovan Clingan? Like, I don't think so. Can I put him over a guy like even Naz Reid? I don't know. Can I put him over DeAndre Ayton? It's like, I'm kind of going over this, like the math in my mind, and I'm just like, it's so hard to like really trust like where he's going. I mean, he was drafted by the old guard. I mean, like maybe Jeff Peterson is just like, yeah, we're going to get our guy if like Mark just can't stay healthy. It's just, it's risky. And you know, I see where you're coming from. He definitely feels like an overrated guy right now. No doubt.
Yeah. Do you have any other overrated guys, or should we move on to sleepers?
I'm ready to move on. I'm happy to talk about sleepers.
Sweet. Let's do it. These are two of mine. I actually have, I mentioned Ware, so I had five, but we've talked about Ware, so I have four more. Do you want to start with one of your sleepers?
Yeah, so I'll kind of go with my general sort of New York theme, touching on Mitchell Robinson. I think Precious Achiuwa is going to be a really good sleeper. He's not going to be for everybody. He's not going to be for every league. He's going to be kind of like that deeper guy, but I think he's going to provide good value. He was good with the minutes that he got with the Knicks. He averaged 24.2 minutes per game, and that yielded 7.6 points, 7.2 rebounds, one assist, one block. Interestingly, his best field goal percentage since his rookie year, where he averaged 12 minutes per game. It kind of seems like that was always something we sort of wondered about Precious, is like where he can kind of go like percentage wise after he's just kind of had some pretty subpar ones for his position. He kind of cranked it up. And I think the minutes are going to be there, as we mentioned, for his position. We don't really know what to expect from Mitchell Robinson and his durability. So yeah, I think he's going to be a good sleeper, and I think he's going to provide some pretty good value. And I'm also interested in the fact that he signed a 1-year deal, which kind of makes me wonder about, you know, what he's sort of aspiring to. Is he looking to get paid next summer when the salary cap starts to go up again? And, you know, he proves himself that he's capable in this sort of like high caliber role after he proved it in the second half of the season. So, yeah, I think he's going to be an interesting sleeper for sure.
Yeah. And like we got done talking about Mitchell Robinson a little bit ago, like there's certainly a chance that he just is hurt again. And yeah, then it just all falls on Precious Achiuwa. Maybe they make some other sort of trade just because they have a competitive team and just want to stay competitive. But
yeah,
there could be plenty of minutes there. And if he is trying to, I guess, have a prove it year after signing a 1-year deal, like, yeah, it could be a pretty big year for him, which could be fun to watch. My first sleeper I have right here listed, Tristan Vucevic. Yes. Only played 10 games last season, started 4 of them down the stretch, scored double figures in 5 of them. Had some pretty decent block numbers at times, able to space the floor. Like, I can't just sit here and just, I mean, I can list out some of the numbers, but like,
yeah,
he's a guy that it's like, he's just, it's such a limited like sample size that it's like hard to make much of it other than, yeah, this guy has some upside. So keep an eye out for him. Washington's going to be terrible. Alex Saar is clear that he doesn't want to play center. So like, they might have to turn to Vucevic. Like, I believe the other centers there are Valanciunas, Rashawn Holmes, Marvin Bagley, I guess. So like, nobody there's not a franchise center in Washington. And so Vucevic might get an opportunity at extended minutes this season. So I think he's a guy, I mean, he's still young and seems to have plenty of fantasy upside.
He's a great player. I think he's really exciting. I tweeted about him a lot. I'll probably tweet about him a lot again this season. I wanted to kind of ask you about this because I found it interesting. Previously, whenever he came over into the NBA at the end of the season, he signed a 2-year deal with, I believe, the second year being a player option. So essentially what that would have done was made him a unrestricted free agent in the following summer. When it was coming out that they had declined the option and he was going to be looking for a different deal, I had initially assumed that it was going to be kind of a longer term deal, just to kind of hold on to his rights. Me thinking that they see the upside, that they see that he's not a guy that they want to let go for somebody who may poach him for a lot more money. So it kind of took me by surprise to see that he just got back on a two-way contract. It wasn't the move that I was expecting. And I don't know if that's maybe because they brought in Jonas Valanciunas and there just wasn't going to be the opportunity to hold him. Or, you know, maybe they have some sort of trade down the line. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious sort of like what you think about that contract and maybe if that plays into expectations for him going forward.
Yeah, honestly, I'd forgotten that he had signed a two-way deal, so I'm glad you brought that up so we can talk about it. But maybe it does, I guess, temper the expectations for this upcoming season. But I still think it's like a – if you're looking at it like for Dynasty, like sure, the situation may not look great now, but if he plays well in the G League, I don't think that they will hesitate to get him on a longer-term deal or give him minutes, especially – I mean, who knows when they're going to start fully tanking for Cooper Flagg. So I don't –
Yeah.
Remember the exact amount of minutes or games that two-way contracts are allowed to play in the NBA off the top of my head, but I'm assuming they'll try and maximize that over the second half of the season. So to get an extended look at him, and then maybe after that, they decide to lock him up longer term or decide, hey, I don't know, we didn't really like what we saw, so maybe not. But I think just seeing what he did later on in the season, I think that the upside is there, and that's enough for me to still be a believer. Even if what Washington did this summer wasn't like, didn't show their confidence, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. And I think the fact that they, I mean, you look at someone like Bilal, they just played him like pretty decent minutes, like off the rip. And he just, you know, was thriving with that and kind of had his ups and downs and stuff like that. He's still a very raw guy, but I mean, they definitely show a willingness to just let their guys go. So, you know, hopefully that's going to be the case. And yeah, like you said, maybe he'll be a fantastic tank commander at the end of the, season after they maybe trade Jonas on a value rehab. So yeah, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Who is another sleeper for you?
Yeah. So I want to bring up Carlo Mokovic, New Orleans Pelicans. Their guy that brought in overseas, kind of had a stash for the last couple of years. He's come on pretty strong. Recently he signed that 3-year, $4.9 million deal last month. He came in to summer league playing pretty well. Looked sharp. Had two blocks, 8.3 points, 4.3 rebounds. Kind of showing some aptitude for shooting the three, and that's something that he showed a lot of, especially in the G League when he did come over to Birmingham. So he's this really interesting, like kind of stretch big, sort of. I guess you could call him like the incumbent to Larry Nance Jr. in a way. Could be interesting. The Pelicans center thing is, it's weird right now. We don't know exactly what to make of it. It's, you know, it could be Daniel Tice. It could be Eve Misi that they just want to give a lot of minutes to off the rip. They have Trey Jameson on a two-way. There's not really anything that's like going to impress me that much until we just see what the deal is. Maybe there's a trade cooking, but it's interesting to see this level of commitment to Mokovic. I don't know what's going to happen, but they're going to need to give people minutes. And I think he's the kind of stretch big who could be really good and play well next to Zion if he holds up defensively. Kind of seemed like he was holding up at all the levels that he's played at so far. I guess we'll see when it comes to like normal NBA experience, just because he doesn't have a lot of it. But he's definitely somebody that I'm interested in for sure. So a lot of people kind of feel that way. I've seen him going in interesting spots and sort of like rookie drafts, just because quote unquote is a rookie. So he's an interesting sleeper. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, maybe if they don't even bother addressing center and he just gets his minutes. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, that is, I'm just going to go ahead and title that the deepest cut, sleeper that we've had. So the congratulations, like that was excellent. You're right. For the Pelicans, like their center situation, like it's like there's nobody proven there. So like, yeah, he just get minutes. Like if he is the best option. One of my sleepers just sticking with New Orleans was Yves Missi. So it's like, yeah. I mean, one of those two guys is going to have to get minutes, I would assume, because mm-hmm. the other options are like, what is it? Like we said, Trey Jemison, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and Daniel Theis. So like,
oh, I forgot about yeah. Robinson. Yeah. Oh boy.
That's yeah. But it's like, not none of those guys are like, oh boy, like you have to play them 30 minutes for games. But it's like, it's, you know, so many different things could happen early on in the season, especially. But I think if you're in a your classic dynasty league, then Yves Missi might be considered a sleeper. But if you're in the deepest of dynasty leagues, Mojkovic is still a sleeper. So that was excellent. Very deep cut. Love to hear that. I don't even have much I can add on that. So that's great. Yves Missi, I'll just talk about that a little bit, but it's a lot of like the similar reasoning. It's just like this guy they just drafted in the first round just because they don't have a great center spot. And I don't love his fit next to Zion because neither of them can space the floor whatsoever, but they might just need to start him because they spent the first round pick on him and don't want to look foolish after spending a first round pick on a guy and then saying, oh wait, we have to start Daniel Theis or Jeremiah Robinson Earl or somebody else instead of this guy because we made a bad pick. So he'll get the opportunity. And if, you know, maybe if you're in just like an average dynasty league, I don't want to say average, like it's a negative way, but like not this, we're rostering 500 players dynasty league, then yeah, keep an eye on Yves Missi because especially if you're in your rookie draft and looking to have somebody that can help you this season, there should be some minutes there. But how many more sleepers do you have?
I've just got one more.
Perfect. You go ahead and do that, and then I'll wrap up with the last two.
Okay, that sounds good. So yeah, this last one I agonized over. I had like five or six different guys I was kind of thinking of doing, but I had a revelation, and I think my last guy is going to be Jalen Smith. He's a really difficult player to kind of like put a read on. He's just interesting. He's so inconsistent. We saw a lot of times with Indiana's pace last season, he just kind of struggled to keep up. And a lot of that kind of led to the inconsistencies, but very good rebounder. He can shoot the three. He's over 70% at the rim. He's a so-so defender. We've seen some really bad stretches, but we've seen some interesting stuff from him. Just the biggest problem is that he's so wildly inconsistent. He fouls at a really like absurd rate. But you know, with someone like the Bulls, who are just going to be tanking, and I mean, it's Nikola Vucevic in front of him. I mean, we don't know if he's going to be gone. We don't know exactly like what he's going to do, but I mean, I think at this point, Jalen Smith has a really good shot at being pretty productive. He's very efficient. So I think even if he plays a role where it's like, you know, he's only playing last season with the Pacers, he played 17.2 minutes per game. So, I mean, it's not a tall order if he plays that again, where he can just be pretty productive and give you some production that you'll need. It's sort of like maybe that kind of like deeper league where you just need somebody or you need a stream or something. But yeah, he could just be a really good tank commander. The Bulls are going to be at a slower pace. So I think that's something that he's able to account for more, especially as a backup who isn't just going to get melted whenever Vucevic goes off. I guess ultimately, I don't think his overall upside is like very high for what we've seen at this point. We've seen a lot of stints of him where he's just, like I said, inconsistent, just hard to kind of put a read on where he's at. But, you know, as a guy who's already proven to be a really efficient role player in this way, I think he can provide pretty decent value. And I mean, maybe he finishes the season just at like a really strong level. He had some great stuff with the Pacers whenever he first went to them at the trade deadline. So I don't know. I guess we'll see what it's up for him. But yeah, I think he's going to be a really interesting sleeper potentially if you're looking at guys kind of outside that like top 200 range.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Jalen Smith as a player, but like the situation I think is huge. Like they're not going to be forced into a play-in spot like they have been the last few years. Like they're actually willing to make moves to make this team not make them bad, but like focus on more of a future-oriented team, I believe. Mm. I think that's what they're doing, but we'll see. Maybe they'll change their mind. Right. But yeah, like I think the opportunity is there enough for him to provide some value. And if he plays well, then yeah, sure, it could lead to more. Like I'm not a super big believer in it, but like that doesn't mean it can't happen. So like maybe it will. So definitely worth keeping an eye on. I have two more, and like the first one I'll talk about is Isaiah Jackson because he's on the screen, and it's a good segue from Jalen Smith, who was on the Pacers last year. Now he's gone, and now Isaiah Jackson is the clear backup, or in my opinion should be, because I swear if James Wiseman is the reason that Isaiah Jackson is not on the floor, I'm going to get upset.
Don't even start. Don't even put that out. Right.
Not even, yeah. Won't even mention that again, but I guess it's something that kind of scares me. But I think Isaiah Jackson being better defensively and very good in short spurts because he's a very good shot blocker that also deals with a lot of foul trouble. He's a guy that can make an impact as the backup to Miles Turner this year. And we're talking about Miles Turner that played 27 minutes per game last year. So could we see Isaiah Jackson bump up from 13 minutes to 20 minutes per game? Like, that's very possible. Is that enough time for him to, I don't know, bump up his scoring to 9 points, his rebounds to 6.5, his blocks to 1.5? Like, can he do those little improvements to see him skyrocket up rankings into like just outside the top 100? Like, yeah. And he's also still very young. He hasn't turned 23 yet. So like, I don't know if Miles Turner is ever going to get traded, because I feel like that was a thing for a few years where it's like Miles Turner is just consistently on the trade block. Doesn't feel like he is anymore because they made the conference finals. But if he ever gets moved, or Isaiah Jackson ever gets moved and ends up playing a ton of minutes somewhere else, then I think he has a very fantasy-friendly game. So he's got a ton of upside.
Yep.
And the other name I just wanted to throw out was Duop Reith. From Portland, and I know already talked about Robert Williams, they have Donovan Klingon, they have DeAndre Ayton, but he's a good player, and I feel like he benefited from them kind of tanking at the end of the year, but he earned a long-term deal. Like, I think that he's not a significant part of their future, but they want to keep him around, assuming that they're not going to be in the play-in race just because of how freaking loaded the West is, and even if they have so much talent on their team, they're going to add another lottery pick this year. It's going to be crazy. Some of these teams are getting so ridiculously stacked. It's like, it blows my mind, because it's like all these guys that are exciting young prospects are just going to cannibalize each other, which is annoying. But Duop Reith, good at basketball, whether it's in Portland or elsewhere, like, I still think he has some value long-term.
I really like the guy. Originally, when we did our trade deadline episode, I did one with Paul from HoopDex. That was one of the guys we touched on, is Duop Reith. I mean, it's like you said, he's just a good player. He's been proven to be a good player. Doesn't need to be asked to do much, and he can still perform really well. I think he's a really good option. I think that's a good one for sure. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see where Portland is at as far as their front court, because yeah, like you said, there's a lot of names in there. And, you know, we're even getting to the point where it's like year two Chris Murray could kind of start getting pushed out eventually. It's weird. So I think he's a guy who's just good to have around and seems like sort of that energy guy that they could use, especially if Donovan Klingon is not going to be someone that they're playing like super heavy minutes in the beginning. I guess we'll kind of see like where that goes. But yeah, I think Reith deserves to play. I think he's going to play. So, yeah, I love that pick. That's a perfect one.
Yeah. All righty. Those are our centers. And we went a little over an hour, but that is fine. That was a lot of fun. You can follow Zach at Dizzle Dynasty on Twitter. Zach, do you have any content coming up that we need to be on the lookout for?
Yeah, man. So I've got my Dynasty rankings hopefully coming out this weekend as of recording. Really excited to put those out. We've got some big stuff coming. Brian, who also works with Dizzle Dynasty, he's got some great scouting stuff coming up pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Undergoing tons of 2025 draft stuff, so expect that pretty soon. A lot of big Dizzle Dynasty stuff coming at the end of the year, so definitely continue to follow us, and we'll have tons of announcements, I promise you, in the next couple months.
Awesome. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Zach, thank you so much for joining me. But that is going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast, and I will see you guys next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.